Joel, welcome to the call.
How are you? You sound better?
It's on my landline, yes. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, I've had somebody else join in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. Welcome to the Monday call. Please say your name and location.
Oh, hi, it's Flo in Michigan.
Hi, Flo. Welcome to the call. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
All right.
It's Terry here.
Nope.
What a prima donna.
You are here on your phone as well, Wynn, or not?
Pardon me?
Are you on the phone as well as...
I called in on my cell phone. I'm not going to use it, but
okay.
Just in case anything happens.
All right.
I'll switch over to it.
Will you mute it for yourself?
It is muted, yeah.
Good.
It's muted on the phone, so...
All right. I want to rock... What is it? The Monday call? Please say your name and look...
How you doing? Hi, this is Dave in Mesa, Arizona.
Hi, Dave. Welcome to... How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, man?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to call in a favor. Maybe if all of you can keep Donna from Great Falls in your mind tonight for healing, because her legs are all swollen really bad right now from her having to move stuff, and she should be on her way here next week or sometime this week.
All right.
Awesome.
Will you maybe do and put her on the healing request list, Dave?
Yeah, I'll do that as soon as I get on the internet here.
All right.
Thanks,
does she have anybody?
Thanks,
does she have anybody to help her move?
Well, the people that she went out there with in Georgia, she was initially they weren't very helpful, and they're not being very helpful right now. So she's immune to herself, and she's a little older, and it's harder for her. She just sent me a text that her legs are really swollen, and she's. It's all she can do to walk around. She's just trying to get everything in storage and then sending out what she's going to send to me, and it's coming down.
Be sure when she's driving. Is she driving? Dave, is she going to drive? Is she driving?
No, she's taking a bus.
Oh, okay. I think that's wonderful.
I think it is, too. I'm just worried about her health.
Yeah.
Do not worry, though. Just put her in the light, but don't worry.
Yeah, maybe
we can take a collection up so she can hire somebody to help her.
Is it Steve from West Palm?
Hey, good evening, Steve.
Oh, this is Steve from Flagstaff.
Hey, Steve from Flagstaff.
Greetings, hi.
Michael, welcome to the call.
Here.
And who was it after Michael? I hear myself.
Can
you mute somebody over here?
Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Is this Lisa?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, I'm Peggy. Peggy. Huntington.
Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Okay, this one. Thank you for being here.
Oh, I'd like to be here. I wish I could be here more often.
Yes.
Wow.
It's a nice place to be.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Pat Houston.
Hi, Kat. Welcome to the call.
Hello, it's DC and Burbank.
Hey, DC, welcome. In Burbank, right? Yes, all right. All right.
Do we have Terry yet?
I have not seen her yet, no. We had somebody else join in. Welcome to the Monday call. Please say your name and location. Verona 12, that's a Skype, all right?
We are 703. Yeah, I'm just curious. How many of you on the line have read The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce?
Yes,
I'm reading it now.
Yes, I read it.
Yes. And how many of you have never read it? I've not.
Why?
Everything else. We won't recognize your voice. It's okay. You can say it.
Never read it.
I haven't read it with.
Who is that, Steve?
This is Ray from Nevada. I have not read that book yet.
Ray, okay.
I have not read it either.
There we go. I've read the first 5 books of Study Guide. I really liked the Creator Guide to the Universe on Apocrypha. I thought that was... I'm sorry, I didn't read that first before I read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 a couple of years ago. Because I like the way you teach and then you go back, recoup, open up more stuff, regroup. You kind of work like... It's like reading a David Wilcox book. He does the same thing. I like that. Kind of orientating exposition, gives the story, comes back, regroups, stumbles up. I like the way you write. That's Ron, isn't it? No, it's Joel. Wait a second. Who is that?
That's Siri.
Joel and Chicago. Oh, Joel. Sounds like Ron. Well, thank you, Joel.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You know.
Hi, Morgan in California.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Morgan.
Lynn, I'm giving your book for Christmas to a lot of my friends and
all
family.
Right. Well, you know, of course, every author wants to play the chicken. I'm going to start the recording.
This conference is being recorded.
Okay, this is, let's see, what is today? This is December 4th, is it?
3rd.
No, December 3rd, December 3rd, 2012. And Wynn and Terry in Sedona. And my name is Wynn Free, and we greet everyone that's listening on the conference calls, and everyone that's listening on the internet, and everyone that's listening on the replay. And I don't know if you guys truly realize this, and it's only now that I can kind of put it into words, because this is a giant experiment, and you are part of it, and we're doing something here that I could never imagine that we could do. And I couldn't dream of it. I couldn't believe it was possible. And when you come into these calls and you're listening all the time, you get used to it. And it's easy to not forget the real big gestalt of this. I mean, like, I live in Sedona, and Sedona is a beautiful town. And it's got millions of visitors. It's got all these beautiful red rocks. And yet, I don't usually notice all of that stuff. I remember when I first came here, I did. But I'm sure there's an unconscious lifting of energy from the beauty, from the people. There's, you know, it's kind of a small town, casual thing. People get to know each other. They say hello to each other. But I'm even weird for Sedona, but nonetheless, I don't have to tell people I'm weird. If I show up in the supermarket, most people don't even know what I do in Sedona, believe it or not. So, and I like that, because otherwise, I'd be scared to show up in the supermarket and have people coming over and say, how are you doing all day? And then I'd have to be obnoxious, and they'd say, he's not a nice guy. Not that I want to be obnoxious. It's just that, you know, one of the things I learned is I have to be very strong to control my time so I have enough time to do what's most important and not just be talking to people all day, which I like doing. I could be on the phone all day chatting with people, and so many of you, I would love to talk with you. And so, it's like I'm used to a relationship is where you're talking with someone. And yet, what is the experimental part of this? The experimental part, well, what's happening? We have these new ideas about the way the universe works. And a lot of it was first introduced to me as I was studying David Wilcock and as I was studying the raw material back in 1999. And the whole thing was so incredibly far out, there's no way I believed it at first. I said, I'm open to it. I mean, even the fact that David Wilcock was Edgar Cayce was like I had read 25 books by Edgar Cayce or about his readings, some 35 years ago, 30 years ago. And I was so influenced by him. And yet, there was something missing in the Edgar Cayce material. There's something missing. And I knew there was something missing. And it left me hanging. And I'll tell you what was missing. What was missing is the source that was speaking through Edgar Cayce never explained who they were. They let Edgar Cayce draw his conclusions. And I don't know if you guys have read that material, but it's fascinating because, I mean, not only did Edgar Cayce do all these health readings and talk about different alternative remedies that had never been discovered before, no one ever used, and he was recommending them to people. And then he did all these past life readings going back to Atlantis, and people put together books on the history of Atlantis, which I ate up. I was reading them, and yet who was talking through Edgar Cayce? Now, at various times, they would sound differently. And sometimes, not that often, but sometimes they would sound almost religious or religiously spiritual. And other times, they just were giving information. And another thing they said, they talked about something called solar cycles. Now, that was not a big part of Edgar Cayce. It was a brief mention about solar cycles. And I said, what is a solar cycle? I was a physics major. I started trying, there was no Google in those days, but I tried to research what a solar cycle was, and I had no idea. And so I was left with this big question. Who was talking to Edgar Cayce? What is a solar cycle? And I got the idea that they're really big. And when I say big, important, powerful. And yet, there was those missing pieces. And so when I first met David Wilcock, and how did I meet him? I didn't really meet him. I discovered his website. In fact, I won't tell the story. I'll tell some other day. How I actually discovered his website was quite funny because David, I'll tell you this much of it. I won't tell you the whole story. David, it was 1999, and David was trying to get himself known on the internet, and he wrote an article. And the article had to do with a certain guru figure in India, and there were all these rumors that he was having sexual relationships with some of his disciples, and some of them got really angry because they felt betrayed because they surrendered to him sexually because he was a guru, and then they were kind of emotionally wounded. So there was a lot of rumors going around, or a lot of articles on the internet, and David wrote an article, kind of an expose of this guru, never mentioning anything about the Edgar Cayce part of himself, zilch, just this article. And it was a guru that I had been familiar with, who had been around for years and years, and when I was younger, I was checking out all the different gurus, and this was one of them that I had read about, and David wrote the article, and there was a link to the website of the guy that wrote the article, and I ended up on David's website, and what was it called? It was called Ascension 2000, and David was believing at the time that the whole world was going to go through a transformation in the year 2000. And he had two kind of sections on his website. One where he was writing books or online books, and the other where he was posting his channelings. And I started reading his channelings, and I was being blown away because David did not seem like he could ever come up with the kind of wisdom that was in that in those channelings. And of course, his story connecting him to Edgar Cayce was impeccable. There were so many synchronicities, so many things that tied him to Edgar Cayce. And having studied Edgar Cayce, there was no doubt in my mind that he had to have been Edgar Cayce. And I remember the first times I ever talked to him on the phone after I started writing the book, I could barely talk to him. I mean, it's like this is the embodiment of the guy that wrote 30, you know, that I had read 30 books of. I couldn't believe it, and I was stumbling, and I mean, I looked at him like he was my mentor at the time, and he was very reticent to have a book put out about this. And I think he was concerned that everyone would think he had all the answers and that it would be a huge amount of responsibility. Plus, I don't believe there was anyone he was close to in his personal sphere that was accepting that he was the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. In fact, he got a huge amount of static for talking about it, for telling people he thought he was Edgar Cayce. But the more I studied everything, the more the pieces fit, and I would say it was like pulling teeth to get that book going. And, you know, Terry worked with me. She helped edit it. And you know, at the time, I was kind of at a very stopping point in my life. I was doing things that I didn't want to do. I thought I was supposed to be a musician and a poet. And I didn't want to do what I was doing, and I didn't know how to transition. I think I talked about it a little bit on Sunday. And I made the commitment to write this book. And I would say David fired me two times. He was my co-writer. And I couldn't, when I first started writing it, I was trying to please David. Oh, what do we got? We got some static here. Who is that? Terry, is somebody talking in the background there?
Yeah, I'll mute myself.
Would you tell them to be quiet? Thank you. But I don't know if you should mute yourself, because then we have to go through getting unmuted. So, in any case, actually what happened was David did fire me. He said, I'm not the right guy to write the book. And my first attempt at writing it was fairly pathetic. And I didn't know how to write it. I didn't know how to approach it. And then I got angry with him when he fired me, and I told him I was going to write it anyway. And he's a public figure. He was beginning to get public at that point. And now I started writing it, and I wasn't trying to please David anymore. When I first started, I was saying, geez, I hope David likes this. I suddenly got out of my mind this idea of pleasing David, and I wrote four chapters, and I said, this is really coming out good. I'm really getting it. I'm getting how to communicate this. So finally, I sent an email to David, and I said, listen, this is your life. I don't want to write this book unless I have your approval. And I think I've got it. I think I've got a flow going. And I want you to read it. If you don't think I've got it, if you want to reject it, I'll quit the project. And I sent him the four chapters, and he liked it. And that's some of the stuff that went on in the beginning stages of this. And I was aware of this Casey prophecy. This is probably one of the most amazing things that I was kind of an expert on, Casey, semi-expert. And Casey said he would return in 1998, live in Virginia Beach, and may be a liberator of the world. And David is being told by his source to go to Virginia Beach in 1997. And he had no idea he was Casey at the time, but he had been doing these voices in his dreams for about a year, 2 years, and they were making predictions, they were doing all kinds of stuff. So he did go to Virginia Beach. And that's when he found out, he started to, deepen this idea that he was Edgar Casey. And he would go study Casey at the institute there. And people would stop him because he was the spitting image of Casey. And of course, at one point, he asked his source, which he called his dream voice for the longest time, he asked the source, why do I look like Casey? And they said, because you were Casey. And if you study Casey, you'll see all the parallels. And that's when David found out that not only did he look like Casey, but his father looked like Casey's father, his girlfriend looked like Casey's wife, and they told that his astrology was the same as Casey's. And here he is. He's got this source that's correcting all of some of the Casey prophecies, even, and identifying certain things as coming from negative sources. And I'm just learning about all this, okay? And I keep thinking, I got to be making a mistake. I mean, David was young. He was insecure. And you would look at his website, and he would say things like, don't worry, I'm paying the rent this month. We got the money together. Or he would say something like, Wilcock has another hit, because he was making predictions, Now, a lot of his predictions didn't happen, and they still don't happen. And I certainly don't recommend looking at David and thinking that on the back burner he knows everything that's happening, because I don't think he does. I've learned so much more about how this interface between dimensions works since the time I first had that exposure through David. And then David was raving about the raw material, and so I started writing the raw, you know, reading, studying the raw material. And it was amazing the way things dovetailed. And what I was starting to put together, which you guys who are paying attention to this are starting to put together, and this is why the book is important. One of the things, there's a lot of things that are important here, and you can come to all these shows we do, and we're doing a lot of them, but you're missing something if you're not studying the material, because this is so expansive that your mind, as it starts to put it together, has to expand. It has to expand into this dynamic of history that you're historical. You've been around for many lifetimes, and this is historical. And in most of our lifetimes, we've been dodos. We showed up here, we had our talents, and but we never figured much out, most of us. And even if we did figure it out, we would die, we'd get amnesia, we'd come in again, and you might be lucky and be able to implement things you figured out, but you don't remember them. You got to remember. You've got to have experiences that tap you into it. And anything that you commit yourself to, that will be your karma for the rest of your life in most cases. For example, you know, you'll be running around and you suddenly find a woman that you have a great affinity for, and you've been studying or you've been indoctrinated that you're supposed to get married and have children and have a job. That's not bad, but it's like this is a woman from another lifetime, and you get married. And suddenly, to a certain degree, you're frozen into the matrix, usually of the past lifetime. Now, you can expand it out of there, but you've got to bring input into your family that's higher than the old matrix, or you'll just be in that lifetime. When I was younger and I had this aptitude for electronics, which I had, and I was building transmitters, I thought I was supposed to be a physics professor because I had such a good aptitude for electronics and how things work and wanting to know how things work. And so I was taught, you got to find a career, you got to go to college, then you'll get married and have children. And somehow I escaped that. But I don't even know how I escaped it, because when I was in Philadelphia, I thought I was going to go to Drexel Institute of Technology and be an electrical engineer. And that's where my parents were. And I think if I did that, my life would have gone in a completely different direction. And I ended up going to Berkeley. And I barely got accepted, but I did. And then everything happened that kind of ruined everything that I thought I was supposed to be at that time. In fact, my friend in Berkeley, who we ended up traveling around the country in a Volkswagen bus, I'll never forget how we ended up in Philadelphia and we're staying at my parents' house, and my father came downstairs, and we were there in the living room doing yoga together, and my father was pulling his hair out because I was his brilliant son that was going to be an electrical engineer, a physics major, and now I'm driving around the country in a Volkswagen bus with this woman, and we're singing in bars and doing yoga in his living room. So it's like all these tiny little pieces. But going back to the Ra group, here we have what seems to be the positive force in other dimensions that's made up of billions, millions or billions, I think it's billions, of individual souls that graduated from this realm and are hanging in there trying to make contribution to evolve people on this planet. Now, here's like a little quote from the Ra group, what says they're the Ra group, from the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Our ultimate goal is to help you so totally find that God within yourself that you merge with it, and all illusions are penetrated in the light of truth. You know, the Ra group approaches everything different from the Elohim group. And the miracle that we have these voices that identify themselves as both groups, and that we have figured out how to tune in to their frequencies, and that we can put it out on a phone line at no cost, no travel, and you can be in your living room and tune into this, and we're not charging for it. And we could have a million people listening to this. This could change the world. This is one of those things that is so rare to occur. And I'm pointing it out because, just like I mentioned, I was in Sedona, and I don't look at the red rocks. You guys are coming into these calls, and I want you to like pull back and look at it from an overview. Here's the group, this group soul that's been around for thousands of years, working with people, working with groups, channeling through people. If I have it correct, we're very connected with the Jesus episode, and maybe even was whoever voice Jesus heard might have been the one that was Father, and that they are, you know, they have to come in and get heard down here to give people the option to grow. Now, you know, you would think because they can channel, they can talk through people. Somebody asked me, why don't they just talk to everybody so everybody could hear them? Well, the problem is, just like in life, there's a million things vying for your attention. There's all these points of view. There's all these religions, all these philosophies. They're vying for your attention, and it's real hard to figure out which one is valid. What do you want to believe? And most of the time, people are trying to figure it out in their heads rather than their hearts. Or even worse, they're not trying to figure out. They're just adopting what they learn from their parents and what society tells them. And they've developed a bunch of beliefs that they feel comfortable in. And they think it's about changing their belief system, which, of course, it's not about changing your belief system. You know, we've heard, and this is probably the fifth time I've said this in a few weeks, even if you believe all of this stuff that we say, even if you think there is a Ra group and the Elohim group and all of that, It doesn't qualify you to graduate this realm until your heart is open. And so beliefs are subsidiary, although when you have the right understanding of things, it greatly increases your discernment and your ability to make choices and your ability to withstand the negative, because of the things pulling on your attention down here, many of them are negative. And the problem is they don't look negative. They don't look it. They don't sound negative. They can talk about love and light. They can talk about ascension. They can talk about DNA evolution. And yet, it's not positive. And most people, if I didn't go through all the stuff I've gone through, I don't think I could resist getting hooked by the negative in this realm. So they channel, and they have secret societies, and the people that follow them seem to be successful and have more money than other people and more power. So how easy is it to not be caught up in that? And here is this group soul that is available, and people don't know they're there. Now, you don't have to know they're a group soul. You just need to feel the energy. You need to feel how they interact with you and how you can feel your heart open and you can feel that universal love for all things. And if I called it the Christ, that would work. It doesn't matter what you call it, except I think our explanation of it is more accurate. It gives you more feeling for it, that there's a bunch of entities that graduated that are hanging around for millions of years, willing to surround and connect with people in this realm if they ask. And that has a very hard time getting itself known. And every time they get themselves known in an authentic, real way, shortly thereafter, the negative comes in and takes it over. You know, it's pretty frustrating. You know, after, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and they don't give up on us. They keep coming back. And as I understand it, the Ra group is far more diligent in creating plans and ways and means to interface with this realm than the Elohim group. The Elohim group is more powerful than the Ra group, and they are delighted that we've made the connection. But I don't think they work as hard as the Ra group does. The Ra group has taken that more as a responsibility. And so you have these episodes where the Ra group has made interventions here. And as you study the materials, as you study the Carlo Ruckert material, as you study the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce material, and as you study Edgar Cayce's material, you start to feel the connection, that it's all the same energy. And even though it's the same energy, it's going to sound different. Just like if you hear Daphne channel and you hear Terry channel, it has to go through the person and it's going to be modified. But it is the same energy, and you have to study it enough to get it. And you don't just have to, you know, study it in your mind. There are numerous pieces of footprints that cross over, that as you start, I pointed many of these out in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. It's putting through the footprints of the Ra material of Carlo Ruckert and the Ra of Edgar Cayce and the Ra of David Wilcock. And probably, if you've never heard me say this, One of the most amazing things that blew my mind initially as I was studying this was in the Edgar Cayce material, there is a description of Edgar Cayce's past life as an Egyptian high priest named Ra-Ta, approximately 10,000 B.C., and that Ra-Ta was a healer, and Ra-Ta was doing miracles of healing, and Edgar Cayce was all these. It was a time that Atlantis was going down, and there were many people in Atlantis that had come to Egypt. Now, I remember when I read this in Edgar Cayce, I said, how did those people know to leave Atlantis? How did they know it was going down? You know how hard it is to move? I mean, if somebody said, you got to move, L.A. is going to have an earthquake, I don't think you would move. You'd probably stay there, and I don't think that's going to happen. How do you believe something like that and pick up and move thousands of miles to a strange culture? Well, if you read Edgar Cayce, when he was describing Atlantis, he was talking about two groups that were in opposition. There was the children of the Law of One, and there was the sons of Belial. And the sons of Belial were of the lower nature. You know, Belial sounds like Baal. And the children of the Law of One, you know, the Law of One is Ra's theme. Every time they show up, in one way or another, they're talking about the Law of One. So the Edgar Cayce material never talked about a raw group or a group soul. They just said the children of the Law of One. Now, if it was the raw group, which I'm sure it was, but no one, there's no way to prove that, they were sending people, they were telling people, you got to leave. And they had developed enough credibility to leave Atlantis. Just as David Wilcock, they had been talking to David and doing these little miracles, they gave him enough motivation to move to Virginia Beach. He moved because they said, please move here. So they're able to prove themselves to people and to be real to people and give guidance to people, and the people will trust them. But Edgar Cayce never talked about the Ra group. But he did say that Edgar Cayce built the pyramids by levitation, and that Edgar Cayce at some point became recognized as Ra, the sun god. And, you know, if you want to track this, read Edgar Cayce and read about Ra-Ta, because the whole story is there and it's documented. And now we keep going into this, and in the Carla Ruckert material, as I started studying that at the same period, the Ruckert material said, we from the Ra group talking, we came upon a high priest in Egypt that we had an affinity for. Now, I'm paraphrasing this. And we worked with that high priest, and we did miracles of healing. And in fact, we even manifested in light bodies. We created bodies that looked human, but they were kind of, they describe it as kind of a transparent light body. And we actually rub shoulders with you in the physical. And we also built, they also said, we built the pyramids by levitation. Well, that was exactly what the Edgar Cayce material said about Ra-Ta. Built the pyramids by levitation. And this was a huge revelation for me, because I had studied Edgar Cayce for years, and I knew about Ra-Ta, and no mention of a group Soul, and the rock group now, through Carla Rucker, is saying they met a high priest in Egypt 10,000 B.C., and all the children of the Law of One, not all of them, but many of them, had left Atlantis before it went down and ended up in Egypt. But there was one thing that they said through Carla Ruckert that was never, ever even implied through Edgar Cayce, and that was that the work they did in Egypt in 10,000 B.C. was picked up by the priesthood there. And the priesthood was into controlling people. You know, the priests were into power. They were into intimidating people. And they took the material and the teachings of the Ra group. And instead of connecting with the Ra group, they connected the lower source. And they used everything they learned from the Ra group to control, to take control of Egypt. And for thousands of years, Egypt was doing sacrifices, and they were bringing in the same sources that the Illuminati brings in today. And it started because of the connection with David Wilcock, his early life of Ra-Ta, and the Ra group. And it was like, this is how it works. This is big, because we are in the world today, and those same templates are here. The Ra group is here trying to make trying to create opportunities to be of influence. The negative is here that was in Egypt. And the drama is happening right now. And you guys are part of it. You're learning to anchor those energies. You're learning to bring them in. And, you know, I started out saying this is an amazing thing that we're doing this. And reading this material starts, the more you immerse yourself in it, the more you start grasping it on a cellular level. Everyone has to go through these changes. So it gets, because the mind can't believe it. My mind couldn't believe it, and yet there was nothing that I kept finding something, trying to look for something that would discredit this, that I must be making a mistake. And Terry was there. We were like searching it together. And of course, we've talked about Terry being a channel in a time with Catholic Church, and that was 1300 AD, and probably most of you have seen the incredible picture comparing Terry and St. Catherine. And what was St. Catherine channeling about? Well, there was a lot of wisdom in the St. Catherine channelings, and it was wrapped around Christianity, because it had to be, because that was what the Catholics would accept. But a good portion of St. Catherine's messages were going through taking apart the way the church had gotten corrupted. And I don't know if I ever asked this, but I think I drew a pretty strong conclusion that it was the Ra group speaking through St. Catherine. And that, you know, they made the little statement and this is not emphasized in the book. This would not be positive to emphasize this. I'm telling you guys because you're here, you're in the energy of it. But there's a little statement in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce where they said, we came to you in Christianity, but we don't often speak in those terms anymore because of the way religion screwed it up. So there's an implication there that they were connected with Christianity. And of course, when I asked that same question through Daphne, and I'm not saying this is true, I'm just telling you this is history, I said, they didn't really want to answer. I had to pull this out of them. I said, when Jesus said, Father, who was answering? And they said, as you would know it, it was the Ra group. And now you would take the Ra group coming through St. Catherine, and they were trying to uncorrupt the church that was already being taken over by the negative. So this reincarnation of Edgar Cayce book is that highest wisdom that you could imagine being delivered to you with all kinds of keys to evolve yourself, okay? And here I go, I'm talking, let's see. My favorite chapter here, I just read a paragraph, and, you know, I wish we could go on and on, because it's 7:50, and it would be wonderful to have, you know, the voice that speaks to us through Terry identifies itself as Ra Ad. And they say there that the both the Ra group and the Elohim group have created an affiliation because our group has opened up to connecting with the energies of both groups. And, you know, one time, this is in our archives, and this is quite amazing. The next step on our archives is I'd like to tag some of the really important things, because some of these calls we've had have been absolutely epic. Because one time we started talking about Egypt and the Ra group, and Terry was coming through with a message, and one of the beings in the Ra group that manifested a light body in this realm so that they were visible and came through Terry. And he was very cautious about talking to us because he had the memory of how the work they did became so corrupted and taken over by the priesthood. And you see, the reason this work gets corrupted so easily is because we are learning how to be growing gods in this realm. We are learning about the immense power that we have, and that power can be used for negative and positive. There's a lot of responsibility to realize that. And so the power that was taught by the Ra group ended up being co-opted by the priesthood. You know, through Egypt, you've probably heard the name Amun-Ra. And Amun-Ra was not the Ra group. That was a negative source. That was the name that was taken to, since Ra was the inspiration for all of this, the negative used the name Ra, but they said Amun-Ra. So this is really, since all of us have gone through all these lifetimes, and many times, we have been taken into the negative, and we didn't know it, and we've become slaves, and some of you feel like slaves now.
We're slaves to the economic system. We're slaves to paying our bills. We're slaves. We could feel like a slave if we're in the wrong job. And, you know, every time on Sunday when we do our grid healing, and I do my little guided meditation, and we go back to source and we start to recreate ourselves. There's a chapter in The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. This is my favorite chapter. It was called Healing the Original Wound. The struggle of the apparent separation from God is reenacted within the self constantly. This is why we refer to it as the original wound. As is often stated, the original wound is the illusory perception of separation from God. If you feel that God has abandoned you, then it makes it very difficult for you to live in the world. There is a sense of loss, of abandonment, of violation, of anger, of victimization. Great loneliness comes up for you as well, since you realize that God definitely exists, yet seems notably absent. All it takes is one person, one event, one moment, one situation to ready the self for a reenactment of that original pain. And you go off on another tirade of useless turmoil and self-inflicted vibrational damage. And when you recognize that the source within yourself is that same source that is within all others. And let me see here. I'm jumping around on this page. The short time remaining for you on Earth in this present cycle is a time that will be used to maximum benefit. And you can fully expect there will be many challenges. Yet you should also remember that the challenges placed before you are carefully calibrated so as not to exceed the capacity with which you possess to solve them. Truly, it may be said that a great deal of the apparent randomness of your life is actually quite intentional and remains as the next viable opportunity for you to have a major healing of the past. We define healing as that which removes any blockages from recognizing the existence of God within the self and then becoming that self. And let me see here, next page. In many relationships, this duality play of yin and yang, forces will continue to exist in cycle after cycle. You have the good and the bad, the triumphant, the disastrous, all working together as a collective vehicle for your advancement. Many times, you have chosen this relationship so that the other self can grow with you, and mutual progress is then possible. A relationship becomes more and more unbalanced if this does not occur, and will eventually result in separation or death of one of the participants. Once a certain age is reached, David wondered why we needed to include death in the last sentence. Simply this, we are talking about relationships that are often consummated in marriage. It is a fact that upon your plane, many horribly unbalanced situations between two entities remained constricted within the contract of marriage long after they have outlasted their usefulness. This is not to say we are issuing a prophecy regarding the death of someone that is not suitable for you, but whom you have trouble getting away from. More importantly, it is for you to see that many of these relationships become lifelong endeavors of personal growth and healing. So I just wanted to read that to you, and we're coming to the end of this call, but I wanted you to hear the kind of wisdom that was all in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and it's filled with that kind of stuff. It's stuff that you can read over and over and over, and it gets deeper and deeper. So we are going to, Jerry, we didn't do a session tonight, but I guess you're happy. I got into a role and all of that stuff, and I think it's really important. And if you read The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, the role goes on for about 400 pages of that kind of material. You won't be disappointed. And
what chapter? Could you tell us what chapter you just read from or the pages?
Yes, Frank, I'll be good. I have my book right here.
Healing the Original Wound. I think it was chapter 17.
What?
I can't hear you. What?
We didn't hear it.
Healing the Original Wound, I believe it's chapter 17, okay? And they're talking right to the part of you dysfunctional, right to the part of you that you want to get through. And they can do that better than the Elohim can, because they have the experience of being trapped in this realm. So the Elohim doesn't have that experience. They look at stuff and they can feel the pain vicariously, but they don't get trapped. They go right back to their space. The Ra group understands the pain of the trap. Filled with babies to get up. Terry, you better get off, because maybe it's 8:01. I don't know if they have another show tonight. Doug, you have another show?
No, they don't.
They don't? Oh. Okay, hey. Okay, they don't have another show. They want to look more. You want to go up?
No.
Terry, are you there? Terry. Oh, well, Terry, are you there? Are you unmuted? Well, okay. She's disappeared in the ozone. So what we should do is some other time we're going to talk about the rock.
Okay. I figured out how to get unmuted here.
See? I'm not a graduate university.
You thought I graduated. Well, I got a new phone, and it's a little bit different.
So, if we really want to do a session now, I mean, I brought it to a completion, and
yeah.
If they're chomping at the bit, we could do it. But I think that was a pretty packed-in call, and maybe we shouldn't do a session. You know, I never know when we start these.
Not right now.
You know, there's other weeks where, you know, we're going to emphasize the Ra group. And, of course, this is, like, so amazingly powerful because actually, I was going to have Carla Ruckert on tonight, and something came up, and so she couldn't do it. She'd like to be on next week. You never run out of great topics on these Monday calls, but this is when I say this is amazing that we have Carla and I working together, and Terry working together, and Daphne sometimes here, and having such access to the wisdom and the history and the energy of these sources, and that. You guys are getting it, you know? I didn't believe anyone could get it, believe me. It's like when I first started having this, I said, who's going to believe this? So, you know, thank you so much for your support and your showing up and giving up your energies and making the connections, and that we are on an ongoing track here, and we're all on it. Not, you know, we're on it, I'm on it, you're on it, and we're growing together. And we will see you again soon.
Just end the call.
Thank you for being real, right? I'm going to stop the...